Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast, where we explore cutting-edge strategies to keep teams human-centered, drive innovation, and empower you with the tools and insights needed to help your team excel and thrive in today's changing world. Your host is Dane Gruneveld, a seasoned expert with over 20 years of experience enhancing team dynamics and innovation. Today, Dane is joined by Ed Boudreaux, CEO and founder of Human Ignition. Ed is an edge thinker specializing in guiding leaders, teams, and companies to achieve peak performance. He has successfully led innovation in a Fortune 4 company, United Healthcare Group, as the founder and leader of Fusion, an enterprise accelerator. In this episode, Ed shares insights from his conversations with leaders on the front lines of change. He and Dane discuss the emerging responsibility of managing digital agents, not just using AI tools, but actively guiding and overseeing them to ensure they deliver the proper outcomes. They explore the emotional toll of leadership today, especially at the top, and introduce the concept of being total, a practice of tuning into the head, heart, and gut to make more grounded decisions. The conversation also dives into how AI could be leveraged to improve cultural fit and succession planning. This conversation is for anyone rethinking how to lead in a world where AI is accelerating and the human side of leadership matters more than ever. So, teamwork makes the dream work, and we're here to inspire your next collaborative breakthrough. Gather your team or put on your headphones and let's dive in together.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. My name is Dane Gruneveld, CEO of the Huddle 3 Group, and today I'm joined by Ed Boudreaux. Ed is the CEO and founder of Human Ignition, which is just such a cool name for a business and so relevant in today's kind of emerging AI age. So welcome to the show, Ed.
Thanks, Dane. It's great to see you again.
Yeah, likewise. I'm loving the backdrop that you've got there too, the sunsets. That's just drawing me into a really good place right now.
Yeah, I love it. It's just right up the street from me, so I run out there and take photos all the time. So
super. So tell us a little bit more about you. How did you come to be doing this cool work with Human Ignition?
Yeah, thanks, Dane. I started off in startups in Boston, really successful one, a complete failure, learned a ton from that, and then another one right after that, and then joined a few Fortune 500 companies, so Intuit Innovation Labs and also United Healthcare Group, and I ran an accelerator there. So, during that full kind of spectrum, really got to understand leadership and teams and, thus the advent of Human Ignition, just really inspiring other people to be, great.
I love that. And what's an accelerator look like in a large corporation?
Yeah, so I ran a team called Fusion, and leaders would come to us, and we had, strategy, we had product, we had experienced folks, and it was just an incredible blend of people that could get things done, whether it be rapid prototyping or, a leader was struggling with strategy. So we really did it all and produced rapid prototypes or rapid strategies, and really, I would say, unfreezing leaders and giving them a space to create. That was probably the most important thing.
Very interesting. What did you learn when you help a leader create something and then they've actually got to go and implement it? Were you guys kind of learning not just how to do the prototype, but how to help them land it too?
Yeah, we had a rule at the end that we would hold people accountable. So it's not only we have this great, strategy or product idea, we would create the roadmap and then hold the room accountable to who was going to execute when. Yeah. And one of the rules we had is usually leaders would pile all of the tasks to be completed early on. Yeah. And it was way too much. They couldn't execute it. So
guilty.
So, we were disciplined about spreading that out and saying, can you really achieve that in that amount of time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's super cool. I would imagine in a team environment, when you think about interpersonal risk or putting your head above the parapet or however you look at it, to get leaders from different lines of business to come in and play with a accelerator is a job in itself. Like, was there a particular art to creating the awareness and the inspiration?
Yeah, so it was funny. I thought we were the fastest accelerator there was. But what we would do is interview leaders beforehand, and we'd call that, you know, ethnographic research. So if they had things they were struggling with, or you know, things that great ideas that they wanted to bring in, and we would have that before the session actually started.
Got it.
So it's almost parallel processing in a way. And then, you know, we were very outcome driven. So we'd always ask the leader, what beautiful thing is in your hand when we're done? So, and then we'd do a work backwards plan to say, how do we actually get there and achieve it? And by creating that, I guess you could call it a process, we took all of that burden off of the leader and, you know, created that space for creation. So it was a pretty unique methodology.
I love that question. What beautiful thing is in your hand when we are done?
Yeah.
That some leaders struggle with that kind of forward projection. So I would imagine you would have had a fairly wide range of responses there.
Yeah, everything from I don't understand what you just asked me to yes, I want that clear, crisp strategy my team can execute against. But to your point, I try and ask questions that don't have a finite answer to them, and it creates someone to stall and think. So that certainly did it.
That's the beauty of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I'd imagine some people would be like a feeling, hey, to your point, our team's got real swagger. Other people would be like, you know, I'd like to own a boat. You know, people have got different motivations on what beautiful looks like or what the work's going to be delivering for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, to your point, sometimes we'd even get, I'm not sure. And that was even better in a way, because someone who kind of thinks what they know that they want and they end up with the wrong thing is a problem, right?
Yeah.
As opposed to, let me think this through. Yeah, it's not a strategy. I actually need an execution plan, because that's what we're struggling with.
Yeah.
And that's a revelation, right?
I think the word struggle is interesting too, because some of my friends in the worlds of innovation and disruption, they're always like, we prefer to start with a problem to solve.
Right.
And so actually the struggle often tells you something in your team or in the relationship with your customers or your suppliers that's just not connecting.
Yeah, definitely. I always think of the power of moments, right? Where is the, to your point, where's the struggle or the pain? Where's the problem lie? Or, you know, clearly the other way to think about it is, where are things incredible? You just want to amplify those things, right?
And interesting.
Mitigate the struggle, and then all of a sudden you have this kind of nice flow from end to end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amplifying the incredible is an interesting one too. That I would imagine in teams, you see so many teams that just overemphasize the need to solve problems, which might be an indicator of where some disruption's coming, but maybe they don't spend time amplifying that, that incredible, you know, element, whatever that is in the team.
Yeah, definitely. And I would also say, I spoke to a leader a few weeks ago and they said, you know, we're so stuck in H1 because it's exact. They're reacting to problem after problem after problem, trying to meet the quarter.
Yeah.
And we're not focused enough in H2 and H3. And one of our concerns was someone else is doing this and we're not. And that's actually
competitively.
Competitively.
Yeah.
And, you know, the world is just going much faster. I wish I had the data on, you know, on the tip of my tongue, but it's, you know, the theory of, you know, chip development, right? But AI is actually doubling every 4 months.
Wow.
But that's going to be the speed of solutions that we're going to see out there. So if you're still stuck in H1 and can't move, it's going to be a big problem.
Yeah, yeah, big time. Yeah, that sort of temporal acceleration is pretty real. And I think it's causing a healthy dose of opportunity.
Yeah.
But I also think it's causing probably more fear and confusion in many realms. I've seen a lot of smaller teams, smaller businesses sitting back saying, we're not going to get caught up in the rush. We're just going to see what emerges. And then I've seen other teams sitting there going, we have to try everything because we don't want to be left behind. So there's, you know, there's two ends of the spectrum there.
Yeah. And I'd also say leaders and teams are, you know, when it comes to new technology, the challenge is leadership will look down and say, solve it with AI, not with a person.
Yeah.
And then someone who is not adept at the technology doesn't know what to do, so they're stuck.
Interesting.
So it's definitely a kind of current state problem out there.
So what I'm hearing there then, Ed, is if leadership says solve it with AI and they just dump it on someone's desk, we need to be doing more. Maybe we're not going to have accelerators in our organizations, but we need to be doing a little bit more of like the framing and the curiosity and ideation before we just go and turn something on.
Yeah, 100%. I had a great call with a technology leader today, and I think his points were valid, meaning go learn and understand what the capabilities of AI are.
Yeah.
Experiment and test. And then find the areas that you want to solve for, the problems that we just talked about.
Yeah.
And this example was, you know, I have a person actually reading documentation, doing emails, and then, you know, communicating out. That could be replaced with AI, but then the human needs to become a manager of that agent.
Yes.
I just thought that was fascinating, right? So you go from not knowing what to do, here are the simple steps you can do to actually think about it.
Yeah. It's interesting, the human as a manager of agent, because we've been talking on the show with a few guests that talk about the importance of shared leadership now in teams. Like, just having a leader title or role isn't where leadership's required. It's required in every single position, because you might be leading, you know, a colleague through something, a customer through something. So this kind of mindset of being a leader is emerging as important. But if all of a sudden you truly are managing agents, then that's a whole nother realm of team leadership to be diving into.
Yeah, definitely. When I ran the team at Fusion, I had a spectrum of folks, senior all the way, you know, down. And I'd say to people that were junior, you know, you're a leader, and they say, I don't lead people. And I said, you're actually leading senior leaders through a session to create a solution. So yes, you are a leader, actually. But it was a mind shift set, to your point. Yeah,
it is. And I wonder how much we need to prepare or provide guardrails for that shift, because all of a sudden you're throwing lots of team members out to manage AI agents, but you haven't really set the guardrails, then I would imagine you're going to get some pretty disparate results.
Yeah, that was one of the keys of the technology leader I spoke to, is how are you observing that it's doing the right thing? Right. And then, you know, that's going to actually be the biggest shift for everyone in this new realm or world, you know. How are we operating as a team? And, what is your function with that agent? And are we operating as a team? So that is fascinating to think about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had Michael McCarroll on the show, would have been last year. He's got the platform Team Radri. They're doing a lot of longitudinal data out of like Harvard and Stanford to show how teams that go through certain events, experiences kind of create more bond and effectiveness.
Cool.
The cool thing that he shared with me is that because of the freedom of kind of tooling and ways of working that I think AI is helping us with, amongst other technologies, that intact teams are actually becoming more engaged and stronger together. However, working across teams, that kind of teams of teams, you're actually seeing a little bit more of a breakdown, because this team works in a certain way with a certain tool. This team works in another way with another tool. And or even in a global setting, this team's working at these times, this team at other times. So it seems like if we overemphasize the productivity at the individual level or at the intact team level, it could actually have a negative impact or create noise amongst the wider teams of an organization.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And it's interesting, talk to a senior marketing leader, and she said, as she rose throughout the organization, the less connectivity across that she had, and the pressures that were emerging were so high, she couldn't look across the field.
So interesting.
I think your point is exactly exactly spot on. So the pressure is increasing. Ability to perform is increasing, and the kind of silos are actually increasing. So having, you know, being cognizant of the horizontal to say, how are we operating across the whole field?
Yeah.
That is, yeah, that's fascinating to think about.
It really is. And actually going to your conversation that we had at the pre-show around sort of, as we oversee AI agents, it's important that we become more human as organizations to best manage and direct and shape that.
Yep.
It could be exciting for certain team members in the future to be like, hey, my job is literally to just go across the organization, build relationships, get curious and share stories, kind of like early civilizations grew from like travelers coming through and sharing, seeds or technologies or stories. There might be like a whole kind of new cycle that emerges from that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And it's, you know, thinking about almost like chief AI officer, who is the chief human officer, right?
Yeah.
And making these, you know, connections as we become closer and closer to technology.
That's a cool point. I hadn't thought about that. I just had lunch yesterday with three, you know, C-level HR people leaders. And we were all saying how like human resources and people just doesn't really capture what it needs to be. But what I'm hearing from that statement, Ed, is that the chief human officer is not responsible for managing how the humans do their work and, you know, the legal compliance and the benefits. If I'm hearing you right, you're saying the chief human officer is actually responsible for bringing out more human capability.
Right. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And I think one of the things I heard from that interviewed 50 leaders over the past several weeks, but communication is actually breaking down.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how do you actually bring that back in terms of being, you know, being more human, having, you know, that, you know, radical candor, right? Changing the way I call it leadership language too, which is how might we?
Yes.
Right. I feel like that's never going to change or yes, and all the things that we know that you see in great leadership. So I think great leadership is going to become the imperative now.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
At every level, you know, as we were suggesting.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's very cool. I know you and I share a friend in, it looks like here on LinkedIn, Tony Martinetti, who's another Boston local.
Yeah.
And Tony's kind of work and podcasts like around that kind of campfire storytelling. I really enjoyed my conversation with him because he's kind of suggesting we are going to need to bring that communication and inspiration back in a bigger way than what's necessarily been in the workplace for the last 20 years.
Right. Couldn't agree more. Yeah.
Super cool. What other, I mean, you've been interviewing these leaders on, you shared, what's the greatest leadership challenge that they see right now? Yeah. What other themes are catching your attention from those conversations?
Yeah, I think the headline in a way is we're not heading towards a leadership crisis. We are in a leadership crisis.
Yeah.
And it's business as usual that is camouflaging everything. And, you know, I heard, three things really. Leaders, you know, in transition can't navigate. So as you rise in the organization, people expect, you know, that you know what you're doing and that you don't need support in doing that. And it's quite the inverse, right? The antidote, you know, to it is, you know, how do you normalize mid-career reinvention, right?
Yes.
Or how do you actually create what I call a leadership lab, where you're surrounding a leader with all of the, you know, things that they need, whether it be advising or coaching or a peer network. And that really gets to almost to your, you know, what is the leadership team? And how do you grow and enable that leadership team, whether they're new in role or been in the role for a while? How do they reinvent? Because we're in this age of reinvention, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a big one. And you're right. So often, whether it's an internal promotion or an external hire, we do onboarding. Hey, this is what the company does. But we don't really talk about, hey, this is how your team's operating. Here's, you know, let's talk about what worked for you in your last role and what didn't. You know, you've got an opportunity to reinvent yourself right now. So rather than just diving into some headlong practices that may have taxed you over the time, how can you adjust your practices going forwards? Like, there's a lot of conversation that can be had in that moment.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, almost looking at your past self, right?
Yeah.
And your future self, and who do you want your future self to be, whether it be new role or no, I need reinvention now. I want to learn. I want to be curious. You know, I want to be enabled in this new age. And I just don't think we invest in people enough.
No, or in ourselves. I actually had a great conversation with my therapist the other day who, you know, I originally engaged her to help me with my relationship with my son. And now she's actually as much a business coach as anything else.
Yeah.
But she's like, hey, Dane, don't stop striving to land where you want to land. She's like, start sensing more like where you need to go. And I thought that was a really cool construct, because if I'm sensing my way in, I'm probably going to be a little bit more curious and probably be a little less gung-ho. I'll probably bounce a few ideas off. You mentioned peer advisory groups. That can be great. It could be a peer in another function. But I'm probably more inclined to ask for help. You know, share my mistakes and fears than just kind of run in and try and bang out a result this quarter or this half.
Right, right. Yeah, I love that idea of sensing and being open to something shifting, as opposed to your point, having something preformed and I have my 6-week plan, we're going to get this done. It's because you're bound to get more out of it if you sense it, right?
Yeah.
And ask people. Yeah.
And probably bring more people, more team members with you.
Yep.
It is interesting just the way societally we've, you know, pre-AI, we've become so attached to our technical capabilities, not necessarily our human capabilities. Hey, I've delivered 3 of these projects through clinical trials, and therefore, you know, here's my playbook and I'm very attached to it.
Right.
It becomes a big part of identity, I think, for certain leaders, certain team members that probably does need to be, I don't want to say reprogrammed, but just kind of deregulated maybe a little bit.
Right. I'll go really woo-woo here, Dane, but there's this thing called being total.
Uh-huh.
And I've run people through it, and it's the most amazing thing. So I think it gets to what you're saying around sensing, but it's asking different parts of you, when you have a hard question to answer, asking different parts of your body, what is the answer to this? So there's the, you know, front, you know, cortex that you ask, and that's usually logical. Like, I did my pros and cons and this is what I should do. And then you go to the center of your mind, which is more emotional, and you ask the same question, and then you go to your heart, and then you go to your gut.
Interesting.
And asking from different centers of the body actually results in the answer from your, you know, intuitive sense.
So that's very cool.
Yeah.
How do you activate that? Because, you know, if I'm in deep in a conversation with a board or a boss, for me to say, hey, this is what my gut's telling me versus this is what my heart's telling me, it would be easy to confuse it. So is there a breathing, or is there anything else that really gets you there before you ask the question?
Yeah, and it's usually a guided methodology, but I've done it on my own as well.
Mm-hmm.
But start with kind of deregulating your whole system with breathing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, going through each area and asking the question. And it's, what's crazy is how it shifts through the different, you know, ways you're asking or the means you're asking from. It's actually super cool.
That's super cool. So being total, I'm going to research that. I'll get Alicia to add that to our show notes too.
Yeah, for sure.
Very cool. As you think about that one, that was communication as you're talking to the leaders and this concept of we are in a leadership crisis. It's not in front of us. We're right there. What else has been popping up from those conversations?
This goes to what someone says versus what I heard.
Yeah.
But they talk about succession planning. And I asked, you know, why succession planning? And, you know, one of the comments that came back was, we don't build the bench. We panic when people leave.
Mm.
So that to me is failure of succession planning. And I think, you know, investing intentionally, you know, in leadership pipelines, treating succession as product development, right? You're, how do we invest in people? Let's test that thing. Let's iterate. Yeah. Let's understand. I don't think there's enough of that today, of building the bench, right? And building strength behind the bench. It might be this one-off training, but it takes time, it takes effort, you know, in building the leaders at every level, as we talked about.
That's an interesting one that I kind of have a rub with, which I'd love to dive into with you. So going back to that whole, like, the way we've worked and held identities in the past is that it's all about your technical knowledge and capability, not necessarily your social processing skills or your application. I wonder with AI whether succession planning can be broadened or accelerated if we were to start doing more recording of meetings, you know, templating of how things have happened in a conversation, whether that's an internal, you know, performance management conversation or a sales conversation or a product development conversation. I wonder now that we've got this ability to record and transcribe and summarize, pattern recognize, if we can actually break down the essence of what a key leader does in a business to more accessible parts that maybe, hey, Ed's leaving the business, he just won the lottery or just retired. Dane, Jimmy, Tammy, you know, you guys can actually come together and start picking this up in this way, because the AI shows us this is where Ed's biggest leverage points are.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's absolutely true. And I think, you know, I think about, you know, AI, absolutely. But if we think about the human side of things, I was thinking operating systems, but you and I have an internal operating system, right? And where you know, where is Ed? Is he being reactive? So if he's below, he's in fear, he's under pressure, or is he above the line in, you know, gratefulness and joy and all the things? A machine possibly could sense that, to say Ed is in reactive mode, but I'm the human that needs to change that, right?
Interesting.
So then I, you know, it's like even teams, right? Why is Dane an effective team leader? Because he has, you know, he speaks directly to people, but he's highly empathetic, and we're sensing that. But then kind of building the team, and I think about that as the team operating system, which is we're now enabling people with radical candor, or we're now enabling people with extreme ownership. So it's going to be a fine edge, right? We understand it, but then what can we do about it? Because I think sometimes, and I've experienced it quite a bit, a machine doesn't know a capability unless you know the capability, right?
Yeah. So that's where there's going to be the right types of humans, whether they're coaches or otherwise, that need to be managing what the machine's picking up, adding the human context in. That's interesting. And you're right, because, like, you can have a leader in a business that's very successful for running the team in a certain way. And you can bring going back to succession, you can bring a fundamentally different leader into that same team and get fundamentally different results. And those things don't always compute based on, you know, what's happened on paper in the past, on resumes or otherwise.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
That is interesting. I wonder if that will allow, going back to prototyping, you know, will we in the future, as we have the right human practitioners and the right sort of AI technology, be able to experiment and test, hey, this is what the team dynamic could be if we put these group of people together on those tasks?
Yeah.
Rather than going headlong into here's the comp structure, career leveling, let's announce this to the world that this is how we're going to work, and then, you know, unbuckling from some of the problems that emerge.
Yeah, I actually talked to a company this week that had cultural AI. So they actually build out what is the culture of the current company, and will the, you know, can we find matches to that? Because that's probably going to be a, you know, key indicator of success, right? Do they align with how we think?
Fascinating. I wonder what their, like, core assumptions or metrics were for their cultural AI. Did you get a read on that?
I didn't get a read on that, but I just thought it was fascinating. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Gary Rich, who I've always enjoyed following, he just wrote, he's been on the podcast before, wrote the book Any Dumbass Can Do It from a CEO's Perspective. Great title. And Gary, when he came on the show, he said, culture equals values plus behaviors times consistency. Mm. So I wonder if you were going to use AI to really capture the culture, which is a living and moving thing. I don't think it's in stone. Whether you could be like, okay, here's the values, but let's look at the behaviors and consistency, and are there ways for us to codify those behaviors and see where they're showing up in different teams or with different leaders. That could be a fascinating project.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And I think we've all seen it there. I call it a bad apple. So a bad apple leader, if they're in a position of power, it's likely they're not going to get displaced because they're in achieving their goals, but they're not aligning with the culture, which is a big problem, right?
Yeah, big time.
Yeah.
That reminds me, we had on this show just a couple of weeks ago, we haven't released it as of this moment, Sabina Nawaz. She'd come from Microsoft, and she was talking to me about the issue with power in a leader, which is that when the power's there, there's a broken volume control from the team, so that the power of the leader, whether intentionally or not, whether they're a good apple or not, the team aren't going to relate to them what may be happening that could be problematic that we may be needing to iterate or change. And that's interesting too. Like there's a lot to be said for how humans and AI can start to identify where those tuning frequency volume issues are in teams. That would be cool.
Because some of the CEOs that I talked to, clearly they said it's lonely at the top. But what they talked about is I can't communicate to my employee base the same way I communicate to my board, that I communicate to my investors.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it so lonely, is I'm always adjusting, right? Not so much the volume, but the content to match the audience, right? And I have no one to turn to.
Yeah.
I heard that quite a bit.
I've heard that from big company CEOs. I've also heard it from startup founders, because the startup founders are there saying, I want to change the world in this way, but I can only tell my current customer, my current investor, that this is the beachhead that we're going for.
Yeah.
And so there's this dislocation of, this is the work I'm doing today to get to where I'm hoping to get to there.
Right.
But I'm hiding this, which seems like there's some loss, there's some inefficiency there.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I talked to a VC and I said, what are the greatest leadership challenges that you see? And he had two words. He said, moral dilemma.
Mm.
And that was it.
He didn't expand.
But I had a conversation with a good buddy CEO, and this points out what he meant, is he said, I just got $20 million in funding.
Yeah.
I got $2 million from a particular investor. And I knew I was pivoting my strategy, and I couldn't tell them, or I wouldn't have gotten the money.
Yeah.
And he got the money, he pivoted the strategy, which is a good news story. It ended up working.
So yeah,
that was. But it's that's the moral dilemma, right?
That is a moral dilemma.
Yeah.
That's tricky. It's hard with teams too, because if you've got a team building a particular product, serving a particular customer, and you're building something, Skunk Works or otherwise, you can't tell these guys to stop until this thing's launched, because you've still got to keep the lights on and keep everyone paid.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. That is interesting. I'm hoping that, as the AI continues to come to bear, we can do that, more rapid prototyping and find better ways to at least move through that cycle of difficulty in a shorter period of time.
Yeah, no question about it. Yeah.
So what's, as you take these learnings from your interviews, what's next for you? Where do you think you're going to be placing your time and energy as you explore that human ignition and, driving more human behaviors in teams?
Yeah, so I think in terms of what are the antidotes to what leaders' pains are, right? So, whether it be how do you create a leadership lab that really you know, again, the operating system, but I think about the leadership operating system, you know, what are you solving for? And let's help you, you know, solve for that. You know, how do you unfreeze teams from, you know, being stuck in H1 and get them to H2 and H3 so that you see the vibrancy in it? So yeah. Really taking, you know, all of these, I call them, you know, weak signals, which futurists talk about, but how do you create stronger outcomes from those weak signals? Because eventually they're going to become strong and we want to solve them right now. So
yeah, getting ahead of them.
Yep.
Do you think that's something that can be done in an iterative fashion, like coming in seasonally and, you know, doing something to sign off the end of H1 and start thinking about H2? Or do you think it's a more fundamental, you know, restoration of the way that the business is operating?
The thesis behind it is that you should be investing in each one continuously.
Mm.
And that H3 will turn into H2, H2 will become an H1. And then if you're not actually doing it in that fashion, you're going to fail somewhere.
Interesting.
To your point, it's a cyclical, you know, investment in making sure that you're doing it continually, or else you'll fail.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Having been a recruiter and a sales guy early in my career, I always found that when I was doing my best work, I was on a month one, month two, month three outlook. If I ever worked just on what was in front of me, I'd run into peaks and valleys. But if I kept looking at who am I going to go out and help in 3 months' time or 4 months' time, I'd be mapping that project that was about to launch, or that, you know, that team that was going to lose someone. And I'd be there and I'd be able to just create more opportunities and to grow and to provide more service. So in a very simple setting, I found that just planning out my day around those three boxes helped a lot, even though it was a fairly small time zone.
Yeah, definitely. And it even gets to your skunk works idea of you should be having skunk works either in H2 or H3, and that's coming down, right?
Yeah.
To meet H1 somehow, or replacing a product or whatever it might mean.
Yeah. Do you think you're going to see more of that, Ed, that, you know, traditionally organizations have let the innovation be done by a small group or a select level of people in the org? Do you think that innovation is going to become more democratized through this shift?
I think it almost has to in every single way. So, you know, it's almost, at least the conversations that I've had lately, are you enabling your teams with AI, right, as individuals?
Yeah.
And then are you, you know, getting to that agent level with capabilities that really facilitate, you know, going faster? And then, you know, I don't know what's after the thinking about the agent. Maybe it's what you talked about, the ecosystem of agents, right? That you have vertical and horizontal, you know, capabilities happening, and that, you know, it's everything's just going to go faster, and we know that.
Yeah, that is interesting. I spoke to a friend the other day about, you know, if these AI agents are that good, why does anyone even need a software platform? Why couldn't you just have an army of agents doing work? And he explained to me, you're still going to need infrastructure, which in our context, I still think it's like having humans doing the right work to make sure that, you know, you're considerate of the different drivers of the value chain,
right?
And you land things, you know, that actually work in a software setting. But I think that's going to be the same in services and products. But the other thing that he said, which I thought was interesting, he was like, as soon as you think you can turn agents on to do everything, humanity's got bigger problems than how we do our work.
Yeah, no question.
Pretty dark view on that.
Yeah, that, you know, interesting. You said value chain, because if you look at the value chain and the outcome you're looking for, where can you plug in things to get there faster or eliminate bottlenecks?
Yeah. And maybe that's the opportunity, going back to at the individual level, for team members in reinventing their careers or their skill sets, is that as we become more, as we start to have a bit more time from doing the sort of machine-based work that a lot of us have been doing in tasks, and we can start to look across and up and down a little more in organizations, we might be able to find places where we can follow our energy or our natural curiosity or you know, passions a little bit more.
Right. I love that idea.
Yeah. Very cool. And if you were to think about right now, examples of teams, products that are catching your eye as far as being a little bit more progressive on the AI human teamwork, are there any good case studies? Are there any good articles or businesses we should be keeping an eye on to kind of follow along?
Yeah, the thing I always think of was on the phone with the CEO yesterday, and he said, how might I think about advancing my business? And he runs a managed service
yeah.
structure. And I tried to connect, because I saw the problem with the VP of marketing. She's like, I don't know what to do. I'm getting more pressure from this.
Yeah.
So, my suggestion to him was, how might you start to create application-specific agents? And he was really intrigued by it. So I think that's where we are with AI, is everyone's trying to figure out how to use it. We're using it as individuals. But I think it's the, you know, AI applications that are going to be the most profound
now. Yeah, and so for people who aren't very tech forward, what is an AI application agent different from, you know, just something that someone will use to do a singular task?
Yeah, so I think, and it's to your exact point, it's multi-capability within an area. So it could be sales.
Right.
Or, you know, it could be marketing, and defining, you know, what tasks are to be achieved. And then, you know, clearly achieving those tasks end-to-end, whether it be I've identified a target audience for our particular product.
Yeah.
I'm now going to email or call. Gauge their level of interest, move from, you know, awareness to interest to purchase. So that's going to be, you know, how much within that agent is capable and possible now. So I think those
interesting.
Yeah.
So, and that's what I had a friend, and the way you described that reminds me of what a friend told me the other day about vertical agents. So like having a series of agents. So one does the list generation, one does the content build, the other one does the outreach, the other one does the follow-up, the other one does the scheduling.
Yep.
But like, it seems like that might be possible already if you can put the right task-based agents together into a team.
Yep. Couldn't agree more.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Have you played it with any of these yourself yet, Ed? Any of the tools that you find a little winners at this stage?
Probably all of the things that you would imagine, like ChatGPT and Grok, and I compete them against one another. Yes, probably all the things that you would imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've always been surprised by the play and the experimentation that's happening in our teams, even when we don't know it, because so much of it's available out there. So I wonder if there's ways for teams to be sort of running competitions or like shining a light on, hey, here's something cool that someone on the team found.
Yeah. I also think, and it's a personal thing, but you know, you think you are being productive when you use one of these things, but unless it results in something, it's not being productive.
Yeah.
Hopefully that makes sense.
But yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. What do
you
do?
It can be a massive distraction.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or you can create more work for someone else, because I did this to a team member the other day. I was like, hey, I put that into ChatGPT and here's what it is. Maybe you can play with that. And I was just like, well, I didn't give them any direction on what I was trying to achieve or what I liked or what I didn't like. And
right.
So you might end up creating more questions for someone than answers.
That's fascinating. Yep.
Yeah. It'll be a really cool space to watch.
Yeah.
Well, it's been very cool. I love the kind of the journey that we've gone through on this conversation. Clearly there's a lot of opportunity that comes from, you know, this emergence of AI and future-proofing. But I love that statement that you shared, which is that, you know, we're in a leadership crisis right now, and how we address that's probably going to dictate how well we can adopt the emerging technologies.
Right. And I mean, the thing that you brought to light is, you know, there is AI, there is the human side of things, and how are we advancing humans, right,
through
the technology?
Yeah. I think it'll be cool to to keep touching base on this as we both see the movement continue. For any of our listeners that want to reach out and kind of catch up on your story and the work that you're doing, what's capturing your interest, how do they best find you, Ed?
Yeah, I think humanignition.com.
Easy. And yep. You're out there. I've really enjoyed some of your content on LinkedIn too. So we'll put that in the show notes as well.
Thank you, Dan. Appreciate it.
Cool. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Remember that by embracing vulnerability, trusting our intuition, and approaching challenges with compassion, we not only strengthen our teams, but also pave the way for a future where collaboration thrives. If you're hungry for more insights, strategies, and research on collaboration, head over to thefutureofteamwork.com. There, you can join our mailing list to stay updated with the latest episodes and get access to exclusive content tailored to make your team thrive. Together, we can build the future of teamwork. Until next time,